Hi, if you record your name and reason for calling, I'll see if this person is available.
Francesca calling about the Scottish Redress Scheme.
Thanks, Francesca. Please stay on the line.
Hello.
Hi, is that Maria?
It's Maria.
Oh, sorry. This is Francesca calling from INS Law in regards to your application to the Scottish Redress Scheme. Is now a good time to talk?
Well, I didn't technically apply. I sent you a WhatsApp, which I'm assuming you haven't read.
Yeah, so that's what I was trying to get in contact with you with. So we received your message when I came in this morning, and then we had some technical difficulties with our WhatsApp, so I've been unable to respond. I do apologise for that.
Well, I think the first thing first, you need to read that.
Yeah, of course.
So you get a bit of a background.
Yeah. It'd be possible for you to send it via email so I can take a look at it, if that's okay.
Okay, but I was just going to give you a brief background. Brief background is that 20-odd years ago, I tried to sue social work. I was in Section 16. Do you know what that means?
What was that, sorry?
Section 16.
Section 16. I'm not too sure, sorry, no.
Okay. It means parental rights to social work.
Ah, right.
So
I was
in care since I was 5 days old.
Yeah.
Until I reached adulthood.
Yeah.
As was my brother and my sister, all of which we were separated, which we should never have been separated. All of us have been through types of abuse. My brother and I had the worst.
Yeah.
And if you can think of every type of abuse.
Yeah.
From sexual, physical, mental, emotional, torture, you name it. Gang rape at 8 by people in the children's home, there's another one. And being told in a meeting that the head of that children's home, Dave McQueen, had that night. I was 8. He put everybody together and he said, quote, if anything like this ever happens again, the police will be involved.
Yeah.
So it was okay to happen to me, you know. But for anybody else that happened to, they then would call the police.
So it is different with you.
It shouldn't have been. It should have been. One of our residents gang raped an 8-year-old.
Yeah, it should never have happened in the first place, let alone the different outcomes of it.
Yeah, sitting in a room with all these people.
Yeah.
Some of which were my age, all the way up to 18, that if it happened again, they'd phone the police. And I'm like, what?
It shouldn't be a case of happen again, no. It should be then and there, shouldn't it?
The police don't get called to look after me. It's only if it happened again to someone else that you'll phone the police. So, technically, it's okay that it happened to me? No, it's not okay.
No, it's definitely not okay.
But there was lots and lots of types of abuse. And my brother went through, thankfully not the gang situation, but he did go through horrific abuse.
Yeah.
And again, Section 16. Technically, social work with our parents, which meant they had a duty to A, take care of us, and B, protect us, and C, make sure we had what we needed and we didn't have any of that.
No.
And when you try to say this is happening in foster placements or whatever, they never believed you.
No.
Because you were just a kid. You were just a kid in care. They always would believe the abusers.
And apparently all kids lie, don't they?
Even when they're showing you the holes in their backside from the buckle end of a belt, saying this is in the street, and I remember doing that. Of a social worker saying, this is not just sore bum, that this is holes because they're beating me with a belt with the buckle.
Yeah.
With, you know, the actual metal bits, you know. And my brother went through very similar treatment, except he was stripped naked for months at a time and locked in a bedroom and fed out of a dog bowl. And every time he tried to tell social work about it, oh no, he's just been difficult with the foster parents, would say. My brother, we didn't grow up together. It took 17 years of me being a very stubborn little sister to build a relationship with him.
Yeah.
And the first chance I had was when I was 15, and we were eventually in the same children's home together. And for the next 15
years.
Yeah, for the next 17 years, I fought tooth and nail to sort my bond with him.
Yeah.
Was
he younger than
him? Well, he's more like a twin to me than he was just a sibling.
Yeah.
We were less than a year apart in age as well.
My brother.
361 days. My birthday's the 19th of March, and he's the 23rd.
Oh, wow,
so
really close. Days,
we were the same age.
Yeah.
If we were, because he died in August of 2024 from a condition that could have been avoided if he didn't end up drinking. He wasn't your average alcoholic. He didn't wake up and he drank and whatever. He still, you know, would do his work or whatever.
Yeah.
But the only way he could stop the nightmares.
It's a coping mechanism, isn't it?
Was drink.
Yeah.
Not drugs, because I don't drink, I don't do drugs.
Yeah.
But, and he was the same except for alcohol. When nighttime came, the only way he could sleep without night terrors and reliving all his abuse. And ultimately, at the age of, in his 30s, he was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy.
Yeah.
Alcoholic cardiomyopathy, which ultimately killed him when he was 49.
Yeah.
And I found him.
What was that, sorry?
I found him. Because I'm a pain in the butt little sister who cares too much about everybody. He should tell me that all the time. And I had a key to his. And he wouldn't answer me. And being me, I said, if you don't answer me, I'm going in the place. And usually he'd say, oh, shut up, I'm fine. Or something like that. And then in the end, I went up, opened the door, and I found him dead.
Really sorry to hear that. I'm
in the midst of my second breakdown. My first one, I mean, my GP says that the trauma related and PTSD related because of my past. But I also would like to make sure that he is recognised. And I don't mean I want a letter from him. He would still be here.
If they had
given him, A, listened to him as a child.
Yeah.
And B, sorted him the therapy he needed.
Yeah.
Going into adulthood, we never had therapy for anything that happened to us.
Yes, the apology and acknowledgement you want from them, isn't it, on his behalf?
Yeah, and when I tried to see him and get him involved, and he said, because he was so afraid, even though he's a big 6'2" strapping lad at the time, he'd say to me, well, let's see how you get on, and from whatever they say to you, I'll get you to help me. And I was like, well, let's do it together. We were both in different places, we both have different stories. And he was too scared to take that step. And that step, and I'm sure you've heard it 100 times, is being believed. As people saying, you're right, this shouldn't have happened, and we do believe you.
Yeah, that's what we want to do for you. We just want you to
be acknowledged
and get the apology. Yeah.
Well, I now have no teeth as well because I didn't get any proper dental treatment, and I was supposed to get 6 braces when I was 11. I was in foster. It was a really nice foster home. The only one I ever had.
Yeah.
And went to the dentist. They told me 2 teeth removed and braces for a couple of years because I have a massive overbite.
Yeah.
And it was all set up, ready to go. Remember, social worker are my parents. They don't need my birth mother's permission.
No.
They are my legal parents.
Yeah.
Parental rights to social work. They said no.
Oh.
Rather than getting my teeth sorted as a 11 and 12 year old, they refused, even though it was free. It didn't cost anything, it was under 6 pounds.
No.
They said no, so I didn't get those 6 braces. My teeth have literally started crumbling away because of the massive overbite. And I now have about 5 teeth, and no, I don't drink, and no, I don't do drugs.
Never cared
and
for.
And I say that because a lot of people do drugs.
Yeah.
And it does wreck their teeth. Everywhere I go, and I cannot, and I've been fighting since I was 18 to try and get help with sorting like my teeth. But because I'm no longer the child, no dentist will ever do it because I'd have to pay privately. And to get my teeth, which would now be implants, possibly breaking my jaw and blah, 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 because I still would have a massive overbite, it's going to be like £16,000 just to...
It's ridiculous, isn't it? For something that was never your fault.
I've spent my life never opening mouth to smile.
Yeah.
Even when I graduated uni, I did not have an open mouth smile. Because I was determined that I would not do what was expected. One thing my brother and sister and I all decided very early was, we're not going to be the statistic.
No.
We're not going to be criminals. We're not going to be, which is sad odds, but it's true, criminals, prostitutes, drug addicts, in prison or dead.
Yeah.
And we all decided early on that that wasn't going to be us. We would do something.
You stick together.
We didn't. Our own doors,
not. As much as possible, but
she became a solicitor.
Oh wow!
My brother was going to be a computer. I can't remember, it's like scientist or something. Something fancy to do with computers.
That's exactly what my brother does as well.
But he couldn't get to finish it because he was diagnosed with a heart failure. And I'm a teacher.
Wow.
I was studying law, and I wanted to be a voice for the little people.
Yeah.
That didn't get believed, you know, like nobody would listen to them. And then I was informed
you wanted to be someone that someone
would help.
To believe others,
who would help people like me.
Yeah.
In dealing with situations that can go, you know what, I do actually, and I genuinely know how this feels.
For you to be the person to say, I believe you.
I can empathize a lot more.
Yeah.
Than people who have never been through that kind of situation.
No, exactly.
But when I was told that in training to become a solicitor, I would potentially be put somewhere where I have to defend, even though that's not the kind of stuff I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I would have to defend criminals that may have told you they had raped a child. And I was like, not so. And then he continued in the same vein and said, you would have no choice, even if they tell you.
Yeah.
You still have to defend that person, even though they've told you the horrific things that they've done.
You couldn't do it, though, could
you? You still have to defend them. Can you do that? And I said, thanks for your time. No.
Yeah, goodbye.
I'm saying for that one.
Yeah.
So, and Mike, I thought it was so a bit of a DH, if you know what I'm saying, on you know, a dick, basically, in saying that. But I understand why he said it. And he was completely right. I would not have been able to cope with that. I struggle with men in the same room as me to this day. I also had my solicitor for years. And then I ended up having a barrister in Edinburgh. And I was sent up to, and this is really important going forward because you need to find this. It was a psychiatrist, psychologist. She's on Great Western Road. It's a private practice. It was about 20 years ago. And it was horrific because I had to talk through everything.
Yeah.
At the same time, I was having to do this with the police in Bromsgrove via Scotland because they needed to know everything that happened to me. Because there was a criminal case running alongside, but always feels like a cold case because it's historical abuse. That case is still there. Somewhere in the police, in the historical, I don't know if you'd be able to get in touch with them. In Glasgow.
Yeah.
Historical abuse in care, which obviously includes sexual violence. On more than one occasion, the rape wasn't the only one. Or the one with that sexual violence or physical violence. Part of the reason for the teeth for the physical violence, I was smacked in the face quite a few times with a cricket bat by various staff members whenever they felt like it, I have spine injuries to this day, and I've always wondered if that's because I used to be sat on as a four or five year old by a woman called Pat Lang, who was my key worker. And if I was upset, she would sit on me in the middle of my back, small on my back, as well, punching me in the legs and in the backside with my face stuffed down to corner of the sofa. So far down, I could see the springs that held the sofa up.
Yeah.
And I was assuming I can't breathe. And every time I would make a noise, she would punch me or bounce. And she was a big woman, if you get my drift.
Yeah.
And then I had another one called Lillian Race in a different children's home that would throw. And when I say throw me, I'm not talking just shove you. I'm talking she would lift me up and throw me across the room My back would smack into the old, because it was like these old mansion buildings, would smack into the radiators or fireplaces, and then she'd ended up doing the same thing, sitting in my back and doing the same stuff as her. I swear they knew each other. I don't know if they ever did know each other, but it kind of felt like, hang on a minute.
There's something similar going on.
That they're learning this from, because somehow it's okay to physically beat a tear and tear and say they're having a temper tantrum.
No, it's not.
I wasn't that kind of kid. The rebel types of kid, but I wasn't one of those kids.
The possible tantrum that they're accusing you of was you asking for help, saying you couldn't breathe. So that's not a tantrum, is it?
I can't even remember how young I was, but I was under the age of between six. I was under six.
Yeah.
So maybe 4, 5, 6, you know, and this, she'd do this when I was felt like it. And then other times I would be told to strip naked and I had to sit. Now, this was a shared room in children's home. Each of the big rooms had a name. Like one was
Where
called,
was that, sorry?
I mean, that was in Glasgow. One of them was called, it was a children's home. It was.
Yeah.
And there was Spay, I think I was in Spay. And then there was, Carlisle and Tyne or something like that. They were all different rooms for different age groups. And the smallest room was for the younger age groups. And then when you transition, you go to the other one, which is the one I was in.
Yeah.
And there was a table that I hid underneath for about 8 hours because it was mixed. You're talking about the teenagers in this room, and not all kids that you're putting in care are then there because they've done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
If you get in the best, and it's a sad
truth
that some of them are molesting their younger siblings. And then you've been put in a situation where you've got all these people staring at you, you're stark naked, and been told you're going to stay like that. And I'd stay like that until that woman went off. Until someone would come in and say, hey, we'll put this blanket around you. Some nice staff, you know, member of the staff would come in to you, put this around you, let's find you some clothes.
Yeah, so was the other kids that would make you strip off?
Yeah, no, it was the staff.
Oh, the staff.
Particular members of staff, yeah. You know, a lot of the children or the kids that I was in Angel with, I see a lot of them, four in particular, that I know to this day.
Yeah.
And the very first time, my sister, who didn't know anything about all this, because again, we weren't raised together, she started dating a man called Tommy Dunn. Maybe we've heard that name, I don't know. He didn't do anything. And then he had a younger brother called Nicholas. Now, the first time I was ever introduced to this Nicholas, he came out and said, oh, you're that one that was raped, aren't you? I was an adult. And I was like, And I remember it. I remember them having that meeting. I remember I'm like 18 at this point. This was 10 years earlier. And for some reason, that stuck in his mind. He was nothing to do with it, but that stuck in his mind. The very first thing he ever said to me was, yeah, you're the one that was raped. I remember the meeting.
So he knew of the meeting, he wasn't there.
No, he was in the room with the meeting.
Yeah.
Every single member of that of Ames, the children's home, was called into the bigger room, which wasn't my room or unit, it was the bigger room.
Yeah.
And we were all pulled in together, and I had to sit right beside the head, which was Dave McQueen. And everyone in the children's home was there. So not only was I going through what the hell had just happened to me, and also the threat of death if I told anyone.
Yeah.
And then one of the people who actually did it, he told them, the staff. So before I even got home, because I'd went to school.
After that,
I was so worried about being late for school. And I went to the bathroom and they're taking leaves and stuff out of my hair and trying to make my, because I was bleeding my nose off. And I was somehow trying to fix myself so that I looked reasonably in a school uniform.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't do it like that. But before I got home from school, one of the people that were involved had told the staff at the children's home. That's why that meeting was held. It's just, I didn't say a word. I was too scared to. But they already knew, and they told me. I was like, what? They were like, yeah, we know all about what happened. And I'm like, is this a trick? Do you know what I mean? I was so totally scared about it. But yeah, 10 years later, Nicky Dunn was like, oh yeah, I remember you. You're the one that was rich. I remember the meeting. Like it was, oh yeah, I saw you.
Oh yeah, hi.
At the shop yesterday. We were talking about, how you doing?
What, yeah, how are you? I remember this. Ridiculous.
Yeah. maybe he was autistic, I don't know. And you just thought of things like that. But I didn't spend a lot of time with a kid and a guy after that, because that's all I ever wanted to go on about.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God.
Treating it like it was a normal conversation to have.
He was, I think, the same age as me, or slightly, maybe a year younger or older. So it wasn't with malice that he was saying it. This is why I think he might have been autistic.
Yeah.
He just sort of blotted out. It was like, ugh.
Just what?
I didn't know what, you know, my sister and I have never been close as adults. Because apparently we used to be very close when we were taken into care, because she was my sister and she was the oldest. And then there was my brother Sean and then me.
Yeah.
So
you're the youngest, well, close to your brother, but the youngest.
I was even, quite literally, I was in care at 5 days old.
Yeah.
It did tell my mother, that their birth mother, that if she had any more children, they would be removed. She didn't listen.
No.
She ended up having 7, 8. Constantly was changing her mind. And do you know, here's the kicker for you as well. When I went to, because I had to travel up from the Midlands to Edinburgh, I was in Worcestershire, to travel all the way up just to see this barrister, and spent hours going over everything again with the barrister. And I said, right, what we're going to do now is there's test cases. This is in the WhatsApp, if you ever get it. There's test cases right now that are going through the High Court. And depending on the outcome of those 10 test cases will depend on what happens next, because you're in the next batch, so to speak. So there's 10 cases, 10 test cases, and then I was in the next set of cases.
Yeah.
And the judge, you probably know this bit, but the judge actually said to the barristers of those test cases that they would not allow the proceedings to proceed because it's unfair on the defendant.
Sorry, that's, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
I'm totally with you, because that's what I'm saying. Okay, I'm still like, what?
I was just registering what you said then, probably.
The defendant that didn't go through any of this, the defendant that didn't feel any of this,
no. And
didn't have to live with this, it's not fair on them.
Ooh.
I know a few people who no longer are with us because of those results.
Yeah.
And I was very nearly one of them. And I do have 2 kids, and that's the only reason I'm still here.
I'm glad you're still here.
Because all I ever wanted is...
You should be proud of yourself for everything you've achieved and accomplished since. It is incredible.
It's, I just want justice at the end of the day.
That's
what happened. Any other situation, say people would have been put behind bars, and we would have had some form of compensation to say, you know what, excuse my French, I don't know my career, we fucked up, we are so sorry, we were supposed to be your parents and this happened while you were in our care, let us try and fix it, even if that was therapy, fixing my peace, for goodness sake, that's the biggest thing in my life. Is I have never openly smiled.
Yeah.
Even when all the teeth were there, because they were so crooked and all the rest of it, it's been my biggest shame.
Yeah.
That I would not smile. And my kids get so angry with me. Mum, you just graduated. Smile. I am smiling. No, come on, Mum. Smile. This is me smiling. I don't want a picture of me with sticky, you know,
it's
my vampires.
It's all you've ever known, now. It's just a natural...
It's literally my biggest insecurity is my teeth. My biggest worry is my neck and spine.
Mm.
Because there seemed to be no rhyme or reason to why my spine randomly started... It was cold. premature aging of the facet joints.
Yeah.
This was in my 20s. And I laughed at that because premature aging, why would they age prematurely? Is there anything specific apart from malnourishment and things like that? Is there anything that I could have done that would have caused that? And then I remember them bouncing up and down on my spine and punching me in it and things. I'm like,
yeah, so yes, from a young age, obviously your spine's not fully developed.
And we were fed the cheap is the cheap.
Yeah.
You know, this not that you're expecting Mitchell and stars, but you're expecting decent food.
Something.
But the treat that you would get in the children's home once a week was an apple. That was your... This is, you know, and when I was doing my studying to do the teaching, Friday night was family night.
Yeah.
Which was me and the kids, we'd get movies or board games or whatever, and we'd get treats. And it was the only time in the week that we'd get, like, pizza or whatever, because every night I refused to be a statistic. I did not want my kids growing up.
Yeah.
But I was building, you know, social services, and they never were. Because they got a home-cooked meal by me from Fresh. Not at other box, every single day, except Friday night. Because that was family night, and do you want pizza? Do you want me? I'd even make, you know, homemade chicken fajitas and salad and whatever, which my kids still love.
Yeah.
My kids are like 13, 27. but, you know,
you've given them what you should have had.
Well, I didn't have. I had 2 years with a foster family that I call mum and dad, and they've since passed on. But those 2 years actually showed me what it should
what
be
it's
like.
Meant to be, yeah.
In a family. It's not abuse. There's not starvation or...
How you're meant to grow up.
Well, the one foster family that I talked about, the belt situation, I was six.
Yeah.
When I was sent to them, and they were called the Terrets, and they were in the west end of Glasgow, and they were quite wealthy. Their family owned, I don't know if it's still up there, it was a off-licensing bistro thing called Oddfellows.
Yeah.
Which was quite big. I don't know if it is still big, I'm not sure. But they their family owned that, and I know that there was tons of them in Scotland for a long time before I moved away. But the dad had no issues with the foster dad. He was lovely. The mum was evil. She was twisty, that woman. They didn't have kids of their own, thank God. But they did have a dog called Betty, Betsy. That had a dog. Again, I'm six. I was six when I was there. The black Labrador, and she was my best friend. And that woman had two belts, and she made it very clear from day one, this is her belt, that is your belt. So I can't get you if you've done something wrong, and she knew I loved dogs.
Yeah.
Then I will use the belt on Betsy. And by God, she did. Couldn't find me, I could hear Betsy yelping. So I would come out, obviously, because I'm not, you know, no, that's not happening. And then in the end up, Betsy stood in front of me when the woman was coming out with the belt and went for them. They didn't get rid of the dog. But the dog literally was like, no, you're not touching her.
Yeah.
And I forever loved that dog, because that dog was literally my one and only friend. But she was such a sweet dog. But for the woman to have two belts, one for the dog and one for the kid.
What did you say that she did to this belt?
The belt, buckling.
Yeah.
I don't get the end, and I say buckle because of the thing, you know, when you put a belt on and you put it through the hole.
Yeah.
So the piece of metal you put through the hole, I ended up having those holes all over my legs and backside. From being beaten by this belt. And I even showed Anne Hurst was her name, the social worker. And because they wanted to adopt me. Oh my God. Oh Jesus Christ.
And Anne was like, oh my God, they want you to talk to you. And like, fantastic, isn't that wonderful? And I was like, no. No, and I'm sitting down straight at this point, and no, and she's like, I was sitting at this wonderful, somebody wants to adopt you. And I literally pulled down everything and said, no.
No.
Look what she does. And it was at that point that Anne Huss was like, oh. And only when I showed her the holes in me was I actually, the same day, thank God, removed. I went straight back to, it was a children's home, I didn't care. Could have put me on the dark side of the moon. I needed out of that place. The only thing that I was so sad about was the dog.
Yeah.
Because I knew that she would get the aftermath, if you will, of me.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do anything about that. The only thing was only sex, but I'm saying she checks the dog, but whether that happened or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So
and then they,
sorry, just so
something was a lot.
So with the phone call, so there's quite a bit of disinformation I have to cover and stuff, and then we usually take the statements for each care setting.
Well, what I would like you to do, because I don't know if I could live through that. I am literally, because of what happened with my brother, I am literally in the midst of another breakdown of sorts. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Mental breakdown, nervous breakdown. I don't know. I can't cope basically with life right now.
Yeah.
How much fun one. And the fact that the one person I could talk to.
Yeah.
Is gone. And he just empathised. He's gone.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm maybe looking at his ashes right now, but they don't tell me to shut up and go put get on.
Yeah.
in a daft way to put in a light mood. You know, because we'd have that kind of relationship where, you know, I'd call him a bitch. He'd call me the male version of the same word.
Yeah.
but it was just a weird sense of humour that we had. Oh,
yeah.
A little bit. I
don't think I can understand.
And then we'd have fallouts that lasted for about 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Where I'd go, oh, piss off. Piss off.
Yeah.
He'd say, but that came back to me. And then you piss off. And then not talk to each other.
Just, yeah.
We wouldn't talk to each other. We'd look at each other and be like, oh, you're looking at, get look at me. 10 minutes or 12 minutes later. One of us, it always went this way.
Yeah.
You're up on stage.
So it's
that was it done.
Stupidity to break it up, isn't it?
It didn't matter who said it. It was the minute you said that,
it was over.
Said the piece, and it literally was. We said a piece, and we were always honest. Whether you liked it or not, we were honest, and that was it.
Yeah.
It was finished. No need to dwell on it. Just said what we said, cleared the air, everything in the open type thing, and that was like, move on.
Yeah.
And then he's not here, so I'm really struggling with that.
Yeah, no, it's your constant is, I can understand.
We were more like twins, even though we legally weren't, because we were a year apart, 361 days. But we were like twins. If my back was bad, he would message me, because I'm on morphine with painkillers.
Mm.
It was friend to the patches. But these damn things, they never, my skin doesn't do sticky stuff. I can't wear plasters.
I'm allergic to latex and stuff. And if I put anything on, I know you're trying to help me, but no.
These things you're meant to keep on for 3 days.
Yeah.
They're meant to stay on the skin for 3 days. You take it off and you replace it.
Yeah.
By day one, I've already got the mic support. And I'm like, just take it. In the arm, stay still. And then an hour later, it's down the bottom of your sleeve and it's in your elbow. And I'm like, it's falling on the floor. And it's, I didn't know how strong fentanyl was until I saw the things about people dying through touch. And I was like, oh, they got over the top of the floor.
Yeah. panic. Running around in panic, picking them all up.
I couldn't find the damn things half the time. I think it would usually be in the bed.
Yeah,
because you just fall off. My skin
would
not. Wake
up in the morning and everything's just falling off.
My skin just doesn't tolerate it. So that's when we went backwards to morphine tablets again. That's how bad my neck and spine is. yeah. is that I'm on that high. There's nothing they can do from my spine or my neck. But the other one thing I wanted to mention before I go back to the barrister thing, because that's where you need to get in touch with the barrister in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But failing that, I can't. My head's gone blank. Okay. I went through a crazy phase where I thought the only way I could move forward in life was to get rid of everything to do with that case, which was stupid. But I didn't want my kids.
Yeah.
Because there is a psychiatry, a psychologist report. And it basically, I had to tell it everything that happened in my life.
Yeah.
In these reports. And the same with the police report that's with, and I know it's in Glasgow, and it's in historical abuse cases against social work.
So in my name, do you have any that are currently ongoing, or are they all closed cases?
Well, the police thing isn't closed. It's just that it was very difficult for them, because a lot of the people obviously had died that had actually committed the offence. They're trying to find somebody to prosecute.
The biggest problem
they had, and my barrister said that, you know, if necessary, we'll force them to, they lost my record.
I would say I'm surprised, but I'm not.
And my barrister said, don't worry about it, because when it comes to it, we will get a warrant through the court for them to produce them. You were in care all of your life.
Yeah.
Various records.
Yeah.
But every time they were requested,
they never
But we can't find them. We don't look for them in the archives. So, hang on, I was in care.
How many that 18,
well, 21 years.
Yeah.
Because I was technically in care, so I might have had more than flat, but I was still under the care system until I was 21. So, if it was 18,
there.
18 years worth of records. And then in the individual children's home records, because they all kept daily diaries.
Yeah.
I'll be in there too. It'll be under the different surname, raised under the name of Cox, C-O-X, until I was 15. We were the Cox family, and we were based out of Drumchapel Social Work Department. That was our main office. Not my main office, but that's where our case file was held.
Yeah.
And we were the Cox family. And it was me, my brother, and my sister. None of us are Cox, though. We're all MacArthur too.
You were under Cox. Can I just double-check the spelling of your first name? Because your email says with an E on the
Marie,
end.
It's MarieClaire26 at me.com. And it doesn't have an I in the Claire.
Yeah, perfect. I was just double checking because the full name we have for you, like just name the first name, it says Maria. So
I don't actually mind Marie, but it's just the full name of Marie Claire, which is not actually my name. As you can see, there's an E on the end of the Marie.
Yeah.
I would still say it to people. If it was Marie, it wouldn't have an E.
Yeah,
because Mary is M-A-R-I or M-H-A-R-I.
Yeah, because we've got an M-A-R-I-A as your name, so I wasn't sure if that
on Facebook, it's Maria.
Yeah, so is that a preferred name or is it the legal name?
My legal name is Marie, it's hyphenated, Marie Claire MacArthur.
Yeah, okay, perfect. And you're previously known as Cox, yeah?
Previously in care. Until the age of 15, when we had a family meeting, whereas my social worker, who's now passed on, Daphne Purvis, who's godmother, to my kids, we did a family history thing and discovered that we were not Cox at all. We were all children of our birth mother and Thomas MacCafferty. Not half siblings, full siblings. And that Cox was a man she met while she was in, I can't remember the name of it. It was a mentally ill. She had a breakdown of some sort. And ended up in there, and she met Charlie Cox in there. They then got married.
or supposedly, I don't actually know, it wasn't around. Didn't care. And then they had my half-brother Charlie and my other half-brother John.
Yeah.
But that's where the cop's name came from. I used to get terrorized by both the home and kids in school.
Yeah.
Because I was also a Catholic, and the ILSA put me in a Protestant school. And in Scotland, I don't know from where you are, but in Scotland, that is a huge deal.
Yeah. No.
If you're Catholic, you support Celtic and you go to a Catholic school.
Yeah.
If you're Protestant, you support Rangers and you go to a Protestant school.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. It still works to this day.
Yeah, I've got some family up in Scotland, and
you can, if you want, ask them what is the religion. What's this with Celtic and Rangers and religion?
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Yeah,
and they'll say to you, well, they'll probably translate it a myth. It's not.
No.
2 weeks ago, it's not a myth, because I had to go up to Scotland. I went up to my foster mum and dad's graves.
Yeah.
I needed a bit of, even though it was a stupid thing to do because my spine couldn't cope with the drive. I took my ESD, which is my emotional support dog, Pippa, and she's in Newfoundland, and we went up. And a guy who's actually South African, but he was born and raised in Scotland. He was born in Scotland and raised here till he was six, and then went away for like 10 years and then came back. So he still has a Scottish accent with a hint of South African. And he actually recognised it.
That's quite interesting.
And he's like, you're the first person that got it right. I was like, I know the difference, because obviously my brother Sean, who's actually Shane Michael, that's his name. Because I want a case opened, and I don't want this 10K thing because I did some research, I thought you were fake.
Yeah.
I did some research, and I was at 10,000 for what eventually killed him.
Yeah.
The abuse he suffered.
So with next of kin applications, I think the maximum amount is 10,000.
It just makes me sick. Well, that does.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't for what they put him through,
he
would still be here.
Yeah.
And my kids wouldn't have lost the only technically other family they have.
Yeah.
Because he was their Uncle Sean. You know, my son is called Sean Paul, and that's after his uncle, Sean.
Yeah.
And my daughter, Sarah Marie, I mean, they're both sick as thieves. She's going to sleepovers and whatever, you know. And they're lost at the moment. They're really lost without their uncle, Sean. You know, and I did
get
married, but he died, so... When the kids were very little.
You say your partner or the kid's dad?
Husband, yeah.
Yeah, your husband.
I did marry. It was very long lived in terms of my commitment fears and men fears and all that jazz. But bless him, he did constantly, but I'm not them. I'm not, nobody's going to hurt you, blah, blah, blah. And he never did. But the thing in my head was always there.
Something you can't... Yeah.
Social worker will be banging on the door every minute. And they never did, but I was so scared that my kids would be taken away from me if I was doing something wrong.
Even
and
they
then
weren't, it's
to
just
live my life
you
again.
Can't, yeah. That's,
and that,
so obviously, obviously you did everything possible so your kids didn't end up where you were. So that's what we want to help with the scheme is our... biggest thing is so the government acknowledge and apologise and hopefully prevent anything like this happening.
Ever happening again? Well, I wanted that 20-odd years
ago. I think we've got a long way to go still. But hopefully...
But 100,000... What's the two... Because I was reading some... I'm very rarely on Facebook, so people see this.
Yeah.
I thought it was a joke, and I was, well, who's six-odd put that out? I've been wanting justice.
Yeah.
For some of the stuff that happened all my life.
So if you want, so the initial call we usually do, so you have to cover a few bases. Is it okay for me to just go through all of that and then I can give you all the information about everything? Is that okay?
But no, I just wanted to know, apparently there's two different redirections.
Yeah,
or something,
so
that's
the
short-term, but then you, hang on, then you can continue on for the something else?
Yeah,
I'm reading some of the posts and I was like, what?
Yeah, so there's two applications. So what we do is, so we do the application for you. So you have three options. You can apply by yourself, so you can do the application and you have to gather all the evidence about yourself. You can use a solicitor who operates under the government legal fee scheme, and then they're paid by the government for helping you, whether you're successful in it or not. And then so they're paid so by the Scottish Government for assisting you with the application, whether you're successful or not with it. So they can receive up to £2,000 plus the VAT from the government.
Yeah.
So we don't operate under that. So we don't claim any government funded fees. So it'd be so you'd be choosing private legal representation under something that's called a conditional fee agreement. And then we operate on a no win, no fee basis. So if your application is unsuccessful, you pay nothing. And then if you withdraw your application, you pay nothing. And then if you are successful and you receive the redress payment, so our fees, so it's a basic charge based on the time spent. And then it's success fee. So the total fees, including the VAT, are capped at no more than 16% plus the VAT. So it's 20% capped with us. And it's only
so basically, if I got 100,000, you'd take 20 grand?
Yes.
Not a chance. I would not have went through that hell to give someone 20 grand to do work that my barrister has already done. The only thing you need to do is contact the psychiatrist's office on Great Western Road to get a copy of that report.
Yeah. So
and
with the fees, it's capped. So if any, so it'll be less. So it's capped. So if anything ever goes over, so there's a cut off. So
yeah,
it can be less.
A grand.
Yeah. So hopefully it will be less. Obviously. So it's basically with the time spent and stuff. And obviously regarding like what you've mentioned, if obviously majority of it is there for us, so we won't have to spend.
Because what I would be looking to do with that money would be to A, get my teeth fixed.
That's what I was going to say. I was
B,
like, yeah, I want you to get the...
got some kind of therapy.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I'm fed up moving house to house because I cannot find secure accommodation. I would like to have enough money to buy a property.
Yeah.
I'm 50 and private renting right now.
Yeah.
And that's because... when my brother died, my mental health went downhill so fast. I was in a council house and I had a horrific brand new neighbour who just bought the house, first time buyers, and they didn't like dogs. They didn't like Scottish people either, and I was told to go and learn how to speak English. They also threatened to cut my head off and send a group of men. But they knew I was disabled and I had a disabled daughter.
Yeah. They
sent a group of men in a van, through my door. I wouldn't know when, wouldn't know what time or how many, but they would come through that door and quote, sort us out.
Yeah.
What?
That's...
My daughter has autism. I can't predict when she's going to have an emotional meltdown. And when we lost Sean, her best friend as well, she had a meltdown. And they didn't like that. And I can't help her crying.
No.
At 11 at night because she wouldn't talk to me and then eventually just broke.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing I had in care and was dysentery. I was either 3 months old and was in hospital for 6 months, or I was 6 months old and was in hospital for 3 months.
Okay.
And more than once almost died because of dysentery.
Because of what, sorry?
Dysentery. It's not heard of very much these days, but it's in some parts of the world, it's still dysentery.
Sorry.
So D-Y-S. I think it's D-Y-S.
Yeah.
And then D-N-T-R-Y? Dysentery?
I think
maybe A-R.
That's what I've got. Let me, I'll just have a look at that for you.
If you type it in, you'll be like, wow. It's a bottle water disease.
Yeah, I see that now, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also, if I'm 3 months old, I'm on a bottle. If I'm 6 months old, I'm on a bottle.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter which age it was. How on earth, as they were my parents, did I contract dysentery and nearly die?
How?
So I know that I spent at least 3 months in hospital. Most of it was in intensive care.
Yeah.
And that's if I caught it when I was 6 months. I contracted it. If I contracted it at 6 months, it was 3 months in hospital.
Yeah.
And that was when we did the family history. I discovered that I had dysentery.
Which is through a bottle.
Even in the
70s. It didn't come from the bottle, did it?
Well, if you're using boiling water, that would have killed any bacteria that's in that water. So what were they doing? Giving me cold bottles? And even then, was it out of the garden water waste from the rain or something?
where did they find that water?
Yeah, because dysentery is through dirty water.
Yeah.
And it's still hugely prevalent in third world countries.
Yeah, it's contaminated food or water, but obviously you were on no food. It was just liquid through a bottle, so...
When I'm 6 months old, I may be starting some solids.
Yeah,
you know,
but
my son
not
4 months
not,
when he's starting
not
some solids.
Not to the point of getting that, is it?
Well, you still couldn't have water out of the tap.
No.
At 4 months old. Anything you had to be from sterilisation. You know, you'd have your water that was still in a bottle because you're only 6 months old.
They've got those like machines now, haven't they? With like, you put it in and
but even then, you'd put it in the plastic
you just boil
container
it.
With a sterilising tablet.
Yeah.
And then you still have to use, boiled water to make the bottles up, whether it's a juice bottle or a formula bottle. You still need to use boiling water, sterilised water.
Yeah. I know it's, obviously you use boiling water and then you check the temperature, don't you, on your fingers, or something.
To make juice, you would obviously then cool the bottle down in the fridge.
Yeah.
Until it's cold to have a colder drink.
Yeah.
My kids did not get normal water drinks until they were over 12 months old.
Yeah, that's understandable.
And their immune system had fully, and then I think they were like 18 months actually before I started trusting tap water.
Yeah.
You want a drink of water?
Well, after what you went through, I can completely understand why you were hesitant to...
I literally would, when they were little, I used to get the liter bottles of baby diluting juice stuff that was already diluted.
Yeah.
And you just take it out the fridge and put it in your sterilised bottles or cups, sippy cups. And that's what they had. Until the doctor eventually told me that it was okay. Because I was just so paranoid that because my daughter was 7 weeks, 7.5 weeks premature. So, that was even more important that, she kept gaining weight and stuff because she was teeny tiny.
Yeah.
But I do think, on the sea side of things, you've shot the bejesus out of everything up to 20%.
Yeah, so...
I don't want... to be giving away up to 20 grand.
No. So when I say that, so it's...
That's blood money.
That's where it's capped. So...
But why don't you get the fees off of them?
Because we operate on the no-win, no-fee, so we don't work for the Scottish Government, so we're private. So if you're unsuccessful, we don't get anything... I can't think of the words.
I doubt I'd be unsuccessful.
I highly doubt that,
My biggest issue is they've lost my record.
Yeah, see, we can't guarantee that you'll be successful, so regarding your records and everything like that, so if you do decide to stick with us, obviously you can withdraw at any point, again, with no charge. So if you wanted to finish the application off today, we can basically, so you have 14 days cancellation. and you can cancel within that time for any reason. And then we can also begin working immediately. So while that still remains, you can also cancel for any reason without charge. If you decide that, obviously, if you don't want to go ahead with it, anything like that. So we can start the work immediately. We can try and request your records. We can figure things out. So we send over some contracts for you to sign. So one of them is a letter of authority, so we can act on your behalf to get the records.
I mean, what's your opinion on this? Because obviously I do have, or did have, a barrister that was dealing with this. It went beyond just solicitors. I had an actual barrister. But obviously we were waiting on those test cases. She had everything she needed, including the psychologist report thing that said I had severe PTSD. Yeah. I would like to have for the rest of my life. I had injuries that would never be cured, and the PTSD was lifelong, and it did and would interfere with my work life, and it has my entire life.
Yeah.
So that's why I think 100,000, wait a minute, that doesn't even touch the surface of what I've actually lost.
No. So what I can do, so if you're happy for me too, so if we go through the application today, so it'll just be just some details from you, so address prior to care, names of parents, and then like short stay, just bits like that.
Prior to care, I don't have one. I was 5 days old.
So were you taken to straight from the hospital?
Yeah.
And what hospital was that?
The Rotten Row. What a lovely name. Rotten Row Hospital in Glasgow. Literally the word rotten with a row after it. Like row your boat. Not row.
What a delightful name. So if you're happy for me too, so if we finish the application off today, and then when you sign the contract, we can send it to redress, and then they can get back in contact with us whether you're eligible or not. There might be some conflict if you have some ongoing investigations, but if it's a different type.
That was 20 years ago, and obviously it was unfair on the defendant, so we couldn't take any further action at that point.
Ridiculous. And then I can speak.
It's a blood boil.
Absolutely, yes. Well, I was lost for words when you told me. And then what I'll do is, after that, then I will speak with my colleague who's on the evidence team. So she's the one that will gather all the evidence, and she'll be in communication to get all your records through. So it'll be either of us two working on it. And then I can see what she recommends. And then I can give you a call back. I'll get her to give you a call to explain some options to you, see what the best outcome is for you.
And obviously, the fee side of things has got me a bit flawed right now, because I'm not prepared. It is blood money.
No, and then again,
literally suffered and bled for that money.
Yeah.
And then, the idea of giving 20% of
So it won't, it'll unlikely be the 20, but obviously there will be a percentage of it. It's just capped at 20.
And if they come back, because I spent my whole life in care.
Yeah. So regarding that, so obviously, if it's a difficult file, so like there's no, obviously with you, obviously you provided a lot of information, and obviously you know there's files out there. You've told us like where to go and everything like that. It would be for like a more difficult. So obviously I can't promise or guarantee anything, but it's likely to be under. Obviously, it's just the cap. So you'll never go over that one. So if what we do, so if we finish the application today, if you're happy to, and then I will speak with my colleague, and then I'll see what she recommends and get her to give you a call, or I will.
I'm going to press pause on that simply for the fact that that's. I know it's not, you're doing your job, and obviously it's your job to contract sign and whatever. I understand that.
No, I only want you to if you're happy to. I don't want to pressure you or anything.
I'm not happy with the idea of, I was in care for 18 years. So I'm assuming that's like the longest time you can be in care.
Yeah.
From birth until you're an adult. So So if it is the redress type of things, and for the length of time and the amount of abuse throughout that time.
Yeah.
That abuse only stopped when I was 15.
Yeah.
And got put in West Bunty Street Hostel in Glasgow.
Yeah, so regarding this,
I had all sorts of abuse.
Yeah. So
probably
with my
100,000.
Yeah. So in regards to speaking with my colleague, so there's other things that you can do, possibly outside the scheme, that she can advise you on. But she will.
I haven't done the criminal injury. I haven't.
Yeah. So she will need to look into it a little bit. So if it is possible, just to take a bit more details off you, so she can proper look at it, and then she can figure out then what the best thing for you to do is. That might not necessarily be. This.
Right, so like what do you need, for example?
Obviously, like in regards to obviously the time and what you went through and stuff, I feel like there's more that you could get.
What do you mean? You know more about this than me. I only saw it on Facebook.
So obviously with the scheme, obviously it's capped 100, but if obviously that isn't, like, obviously that is the like minimum of what you deserve, so there are other possibilities for you to go through, like, a different way. It wouldn't be with us, but my colleague can advise you and have a conversation with you about that kind of thing if that's something you'd like.
Are you talking about criminal injuries compensation?
Yeah, so you can go the, like, a different.
There's other. It's not a different. It's alongside, if I remember rightly, because the same thing, but they're technically criminal. So there's a criminal case as well as a civil case.
Yeah. So with us, so it's about, this is a claim made against social service and the government, but you could do one separate as well that was for the people, so like individual people.
Yeah, because there was, I know at least one of the people are dead.
Yeah.
But I'm starting an aneurysm all over again. I mean, I should, God forgive me for saying it like that, but...
Yeah,
Lily and Ray, the one that used to throw me around and tell me I had anger in me and I had to get it out.
Yeah.
And she would literally throw me off wall, one side of the room to the other.
Yes, you would, yes.
Anger in me, even though I wasn't ever angry like that.
Yes.
But I think she was angry and had anger in her and needed somebody to vent it
was,
on.
Yeah, she was using you to take her anger out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if that's something you'd like, if you wanted to, if we finished the application off today, it just gives you more questions.
You'd need to be able to get a hold of those two reports. And the one that the psychologist has. They're the same, but slightly different, because the psychologist goes into how it affects me and how it will continue to affect me.
But that's a big, big factor, obviously, long-term effects. It shows, obviously, what it has done
done up until that point and what it has continued to do to this day.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though that was it might have been 15 years ago, but I still live exactly the same as I did then. I don't trust men. I don't do relationships because I don't trust men.
No.
And I never had uncles for my children, if you get my drift, because I wasn't going to put my kids in harm's way.
Yeah. So also regarding that as well, it's just something I can offer. Would you like to, so regarding us contacting you or you contacting us, would you like to keep it with female staff members?
Preferably, yeah. I have a female barrister and stuff. So.
Yeah, of course.
And the psychologist or psychiatrist, women.
Yeah.
She was a female as well.
Yeah, no, we'll keep it
all. I know that the police side of things, it took 6 weeks of having to go back in sessions and do this. It was awful.
Yeah.
And I do not want to have to redo it, hence why getting a hold of the actual police thing that says it all.
Yeah.
Means I don't have to go through telling all that again, because I don't know if I would survive it.
Yeah, no, so with this side of it, so it is just the short statements, but with everything that we've spoken about today, so I've made some notes and stuff so I can write up a short statement on your behalf. So that's kind of, so with INS Law, that's what we do. So we do the application for you, so you don't have to, so there will be a conversation that you have to have with Leah. So Leah's the one on the investigation side. We might have to take further witness statement, but that is in your own time when you're ready further on down the line.
How would you be able to take witness statements other than children's homes?
So by witness statement, so it's with you.
Oh, I'm the witness.
Yeah.
Like you say, I apart from a few names that I remember.
When I first I was confused by that as well, but no, it means you. So
I get, you know, if I was, I would get moved around.
Yeah.
Different foster families or different children's homes. You'd be somewhere for 6 weeks and somewhere for 6 months. And
yeah, so
you're coming to bone.
Yeah, so with regards to that, so we'd be able to get in contact with Glasgow Council to try and get your records with the places you were placed and for how long and when, where, all that kind of stuff. So we'd be able to access that if you sign the letter of authority. Obviously, that's something you can do in your own time if you're ready and it's something you want to pursue. But with regards to
if you have a chat with Leah, about it all, and then potentially give me a call back about it, because I'm just a bit hesitant
because it's blood money, and
the idea of taking it from the victim, I would not feel comfortable with saying that to someone who's been through what I've been through.
Yeah,
taking it from the SOBs that were my parents, because they were meant to do. With my birth mother, we don't have a close relationship, but with my birth mother, I actually let her read it, and I said, that's what I went through.
Yeah.
And she was so apologetic because she was promised at the hearing, I can't remember the name of it now.
Yeah.
It wasn't a parole hearing, the panel. When we were officially removed from her, I was 3 and a half. So they kept trying to put us back with her. Three and a half years, but most of that was spent in various children's homes. Eglinton was one of them. And then after 3 and a half, the one thing she asked them to promise was that we would A, not be separated, and B, if we were going to be, we weren't allowed to be adopted unless she had to say so. I don't think she had the authority to do that. But they said yes to that. And apparently somebody wanted to adopt me during the dysentery thing, and it was refused because she'd said no. Well, at that point, she was still sort of in the picture, so I wasn't 3 and a half. But after 3 and a half, they promised that we would not be separated, and one of the first things they did was separate.
Yeah.
And then we didn't see each other for potentially 2 years at a time.
Yeah.
And we knew that each other existed, but we very rarely, I'm talking once or twice every year or once every 2 years, we would get to spend an hour somewhere.
Which is nothing.
With each other. And we didn't know each other. We were strangers.
Well, yeah, you separate from such a young age. When you do see each other, it's like, well...
I was always the one, heart on the shoulder type thing, heart on the sleeve, that I wanted my family together.
Yeah,
and I was a little bitch when it came to my family. I want my brother and sister, you know. And I do remember being so passionate.
You fought for something that you were rightly entitled to.
And unfortunately, it didn't go the way it should have, because I shouldn't have had to fight like that to get a relationship with my siblings that I should have been allowed to grow up with.
Yeah.
And even if we weren't allowed to grow up together, because apparently it was cheaper for us to be separated than it was to keep us together. I call baloney on that one, because if we're all in a children's home together,
doesn't cost any more for those three kids to share one bedroom because we're siblings, and we would have had protection from a lot of the stuff that happened.
Yeah.
We'd have each other. But being separated meant we had no one that had it back.
No.
So when stuff happened in the children's homes by other staff members or other residents, we didn't have anyone that would say, no, you're not doing that.
Yeah.
I had a guy break my nose when I was six. His name was Scott Wilson.
Yeah.
And he literally punched me so hard in my face. I was 6 years old. And someone had apparently went round saying that I was saying their mum was a bastard. Turns out their mum had just died. I don't know how she died. I didn't know anything about her.
Yeah.
But apparently somebody trapped her and basically said that this was a teenager that was going around saying this. I'm 6 years old. Think about that. It's a teeny tot. A six.
Yeah.
I'm 6 years old. I didn't even know what it meant.
No.
I'm not saying I didn't have probably a really bad point in mind because I was raised in children's homes in Glasgow. But to say that someone is a bastard because they no longer... Oh, no. I apparently called them, I remember it now, them a bastard because they didn't have a mother or father. That was what all that was about. Even though I didn't... I was 6 years old. I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't say it. Because I really liked Scott. He was always really nice.
Yeah.
He was 15. He always was really nice and did stick up for the younger ones.
Yeah.
And for him to come at me that night and literally punch me so hard that it broke my nose and probably damaged my piece of style.
Yeah.
You know, that night it was like bloody gang warfare in that place. It was awful. There was only two night staff. And they were trying to keep him away from me while mayhem was breaking out everywhere in that children's home. This was in Ailsa as well.
Where was that one?
It was a children's home. So Ailsa.
Ailsa.
On Turnberry Road in Glasgow. The West End, Glasgow. But as I say, there were two nights asking, because you can't hold everybody.
No.
There was about 100 kids in this place. And there's only two of them for all the different units within it.
Yeah.
They also had no control about people's friends that came in and did things whilst reading bedtime stories to 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds. I'm sure you get the trust here.
Yeah.
All I know is you had ginger hair. And this went on for a very long time. I couldn't even tell you how long. I was literally about four onwards. And this was somebody's friend that they just let in.
It's one of the staff members' friends?
I don't know. He wasn't a resident. He was older than the resident. And he would suddenly be there at bedtime.
Did that happen
bedtime
to you?
Story. Yes.
Yeah.
And at 4 years old, somebody's wanting to give you a hug and wanting to read you a bedtime story. That doesn't happen when you're a kid in care, especially not when I was.
No. Was that when you were in...
Ailsa.
Ailsa, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that happened in Ailsa.
Yeah.
Do that, Bella.
So when you say... So you mentioned, so is it Pat Lang?
Pat, as in Patricia. Pat.
Pat, yeah.
Pat Lang.
Pat Lang. When she
was in Ailsa.
And that was in there as well.
Yeah, that she was my key worker. As in the person that was supposed to be looking after me the most.
She did not
well,
do that.
Well, she looked after me all right by beating the crap out of me and making it hard for me to breathe.
And then you mentioned...
Forcing me into Prodding school in a pushchair. She would take me to school in a pushchair, and every time I tried to get out to walk, she would lift the pushchair back, you know, four-wheel pushchair, so that I could not get out of it without falling on my face on the concrete. And she would take me all the way to my classroom to unbuckle me. So it's a dog panting in the background, sorry. She would unbuckle me and put me in the chair and wait until the bell rang and every other kid came in. Then she would leave and tell me that she'd collect me at 3 o'clock with my pushchair, front of everybody. And she did this, I don't even know how long it was for.
And how old are you then?
I was between 5 and 10.
Five years. So she'd take you to school in the pushchair when you were 10 years old, between 5 and 10.
It was mortifyingly embarrassing. Yeah. I can remember I was so bullied. Because A, I was a kid in care. B, I had a son named Cox. So you can imagine the Marie Claire Cox. And she's in care because she has daddies. Yeah, you can imagine the words.
Yep.
And then I also remember being very lonely because one day you'd have friends and then the parents would find out you were in children's home. And the very next day...
Not allowed to spend time with her anymore.
Not allowed to be with her. She's dirty.
Yeah.
And that is the exact word that they would say to me. His mama says you're dirty. So I'm not allowed to play with you anymore.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I was physically dirty. I was, actually, to be fair. They didn't really do a lot of caving for the kids in their care.
You weren't looked after, were you?
I didn't see a toothbrush until I went to my foster mum and dad when I was 10. I literally didn't know what it was. And they were like, what? And then I was removed from there when I was 12 because social work wanted to put... And I found this out from a foster mum who was furious because she'd been a foster parent for 40 years.
Yeah.
Well, in the end, that was 40 odd years. But she was told that I was a single. I wasn't a person. I was a single. And they had a three that needed to be kept together. So they would be taking, it wasn't a choice. They would be taking the single and placing the three so they could be kept together.
So they split you and your siblings up?
Furious with this. And not that my family wasn't good enough for that. No. But these three lads, apparently, all of them are in prison, by the way, which my foster mum, it upset her because she tried to teach them right from wrong.
Yeah.
But in the end up, she was like, they put them with us to stop potentially what had happened happening.
What was their name?
My foster mum and dad were Agnes and Archie McKeown.
How much was their name, sorry?
Agnes, A-G-N-E-S, and Archie.
Yeah, and what was the surname?
A-R-C-H-I-E. McKeown, which is Mike Charlie Kilo, Echo Oscar Whiskey November. I always remember the son name because she always, because I kept getting it wrong and saying McKeown. Again, the religion comes into it. The religion comes back into it. It's McKeown and McKeown.
Yeah.
McKeown is the Rangers sponsor for the Protestants. And thanks to my foster mum and dad were Catholic. If I was baptised Catholic, I was actually baptised Catholic by my godmother. So... Obviously, a name like Marie Claire in Scotland, I was definitely a Catholic.
Yeah.
Because that's a Catholic name. Double Barrow was a Catholic. But anyway.
Were you ever known as, with that surname?
McKeown, for 2 years. Well, I was with them. I called them mum and dad.
Yeah.
But she said to me, think of it as McKeown, but it's McKeown, like you're yawning. McKeown.
McKeown. That's a good way
to remember it. It was, because I'm doing it. But it's basically M-C-K-E-O-N, as in you own something, O-W-S. McKeown. And I was only there for 2 years, from ages of 10 to 12.
Yeah.
And again, so the three boys could move in, the brothers.
Yeah.
The film had one spare bedroom, so it was beaten up with mine. So I was put, where are we for this one? I was put in a special school.
Right. What was that one?
That was called South Annan Special School. And by God, the residents there were some sorts of special. I, however, did not need to be there. And I'm not just saying that.
Yeah.
And my mum and dad, as in my foster mum and dad,
yeah,
they were so angry,
yeah,
when they learned where I was being put, because I had never needed to be in any kind of special school. I could be disruptive, mainly because my life was a chaos.
You were also 10 years old.
I was disruptive, I was 12, but I was disruptive in the terms of I wasn't used to structure, and feeling belonging somewhere, so I was always
mean. You were in mental pain, weren't you, so it was normal,
I was waiting on the abuse, I knew it was going to start, when was it going to start, I didn't know it was abuse at the time, but I knew something bad was going to happen, and I waited for it every day. So my behaviour was more ADHD.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know if I was ever actually diagnosed with it, but probably more likely that I was just attention deficit hyperactive.
Same.
Because I would be hyper. I was never destructive or I wasn't, you know, a hitter or a biter or a kicker. I was never like that. I was never violent.
Yeah, it shows difference in male and female as well.
My son has ADHD. He's never violent or anything like that. He just gets bored.
Yeah, I am as well.
And now as a teacher, I can look back on that and go, that kind of makes sense because every time they say, because I was always in bottom set for everything.
Yeah.
Because I was a kid in care. And it was because I was a kid in care.
You weren't given
and
a chance.
And then eventually, one of the reasons that my foster parents were so angry was that I was put in this special school with, God forgive me, with actual mental retards.
Yeah.
And I say that, and it's not against anyone who has a physical disability, because they didn't. These kids were just bloody mental.
Yeah.
These kids were terrors. And they would have fun killing animals. They would have fun. There was a beautiful old mansion house again, with the sash Victorian windows of individual panes.
Yeah.
And they had competitions. These old sneaks. They would have competitions to see who could break all the windows the fastest. And this wasn't a once in the blue moon thing. This happened every time. Every time those windows got replaced, they would go around and smash every single one.
Yeah.
And in my bedroom, I had no window panes at all. All through winter, all through summer. Because in the end, I was stuck replacing them. So the people that weren't doing anything wrong had to freeze or boil. This is where Lily and Rafe worked, the one that threw me around the room, that one. And as I say, my bedroom had it had the frame and all the individual frames. There was like 16 panes to a frame. But there's no glass in them.
It's just, you said that this is where that other woman threw you in the
back. Lily and Rafe. Lily and Rafe. And that was in Fairly, which is F-A-I-R-L-I-E, which is near Largs, L-A-R-G-S.
Yeah.
And that was in Ayrshire in Scotland. But it was South Annan Special School.
South
Annan, A-N-N-A-N.
South Annan, yeah.
And again, they had competitions to see me. They put Pyrex, like plastic panes in, and they'd set them on fire. They would put feces in your bed. They would put glass in your bed. They would urinate in your bed. And probably other stuff too. This is the kids I'm talking about.
Yeah. You didn't belong there, did you?
And the school, oh my God, I remember it. And I was stunned. Because I've never needed special school. I've never needed to have extra help to learn things.
Yeah.
So the very first time I went into the
quote classroom. It was just one of the rooms. Well, it's a mansion house.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful mansion house that smells like urine and has no windows. So you can imagine it's yeah. But the rooms, you know, the front rooms, so to speak, are massive. So one of these are made into classrooms. And there was classroom one and classroom two and classroom three, which is a porta cabin outside.
Oh.
And I started off in classroom one, learning one plus one, two
yeah.
and two. And I was looking at the woman like,
what?
I was 12, so I'm like, this is a joke.
Why am I here?
And I was like, excuse me, miss, I think you've given me someone else's, maybe some nursery. To the nursery here. I've only been there like a week. So I have no idea what's going on. Except
yeah.
that there's people that wear diapers who are the same age as me who can
yeah.
go to the bathroom but choose not to. Because they get more attention from everybody if they don't. They get drift. And even though this kid was called Andrew, actually, I don't know his surname, but he used to defecate. And you can tell when he was doing it because I have a kid now, so you can tell when they're doing it. But this is a kid that's the same age as me, and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And he was like, because it's more fun this way. Eh? It's more fun to do yourself than just go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Why? He said, well, he's like, please come and help me. I kid on him upset. They gave me sweeties. And I was like, wow, okay. Nothing wrong with that kid, except he, in a weird way, is very intelligent. In a disgusting weird way, but he's intelligent. He knows he'll get attention and given things when he's compliant and lets them change them.
Yeah.
But obviously, this is a special skill. So you end up them having hissy fits all the time. And evil stuff would go on there. But as I say, the school side of things, yeah, I was in their school system for 3 months, and my God, it was the longest 3 months of my life.
Yeah.
Because I did not need to learn the alphabet. I did not need to learn times table or any of that lot. I didn't need that.
No.
I know what a verb is. I know what an adjective is. Thanks for the word. I don't need this. I needed to be with, because I'd always been in mainstream school. And then all of a sudden I'm in a special school. Learning how to do what most of the kids are doing. I had to fight tooth and nail, but eventually because I should have been starting high school.
Yeah.
So
I
missed the first year of my high school because of it. So I ended up having to go back a year. So when I did get to high school, I wasn't with the popular crowd, again, I didn't care, but I did actually make friends.
Yeah.
Really good friends. And then eventually I aged out of South Annan, and they put me in a place called Redhugh, which I hated. Again, beautiful building, run by the Salvation Army, but again, I was still a kid of social work.
Yeah.
And that actually was a beautiful building, well maintained. It looked like the Sistine Chapel on the roof in that place because it was all handy.
Yeah.
It was stunning. And our unit was in the attic, which was fine. I had no choice but to change school. I didn't want to change school.
Yeah.
Because I knew how much I had to fight to get to school last time. I didn't want to go through that again.
Yeah.
In the end, I still did have to go through similar before I could even be allowed to go to a mainstream school. And then it was like 1 day a week, then 2 days. And I'm like, I don't need this.
I
want to go to school.
Yeah, I just want to go to school.
Then the bullying started. And I still have scars to this day from the bullying. And that was because...
What was that, sorry?
That was bullying from kids in the school.
Was that in Redhugh, did you say?
When I was in Redhugh, and I went to St. Winning's, I think it was, Academy, in Co-Winning's. No, yeah, which was nowhere near my old school, which was St. Andrew's Academy in Saltport, in Glasgow, in Ayrshire. But yeah, so when they put me there in that school, I absolutely hated it, because the minute they found out I was in care,
yeah,
I was like, nobody would touch me with a bad soul. Yep, nobody would touch me with a bad soul. And I didn't. I had one friend, and then because of the bullies, that friend was scared to even talk to me because they'd torture her if I wasn't around, as in verbally torture.
Yeah.
And then I discovered through Daphne, my social worker at the time, Daphne Purvis, who since passed on with, well, she's died of leukemia, where she was at an event. She was no longer my social worker at this point. But she stayed in touch. And again, she ended up technically walking me down the aisle. And being a registry officer, hence the technical. because the big issue is obviously I'm a Catholic and my to-be was the Protestant. So we couldn't have it in a chapel. And I refused to have it in the church.
Yeah.
Because I'm a Catholic and no. So we'll meet in the middle and do a registry. So we live that way. But Daphne had been at an event somewhere, like out here, we were mingling, and she was from Worska Bride, which is right in the middle of where I was. So it was the right, she was, you know, in Ayrshire area.
Yeah.
So there was an event held somewhere, and my guidance teacher, who was also my PE teacher, who smoked like a chimney, called Mrs. Brown. And she was at the same event. Now, she didn't know Daphne, and Daphne didn't know her. And I came up in a conversation that Mrs. Brown was having with someone near Daphne.
Yeah.
Daphne didn't even know this woman, but she had my name. Now, Marie Claire, is that what I was referencing at the time, is a very, you know, standout name. Not standout as in, well, hey, look at me, but standout as in, well,
it's not common.
You know, Amanda or Jane. It's not a common name. Not together anyway. So she had my name, and she then, anyway, so to speak, she was the woman's bloody life. And apparently, she had this one student that was from Redhill, you know that place, Redhill, and she's talking to people. And I was like, yeah, we know that place, Redhill, yeah. Well, basically, you know, she keeps coming to me and saying that she's being bullied by these girls, and I tell the girls to carry on. Because she's a Redhill bitch, and she's there as everything she gets.
Oh.
And Daphne did approach her and say, if I ever hear that she gets bullied again, I know exactly. And Daphne was a very big woman. And she had authority about her, if you get my drift. She may have been large in stature, but she was also tall. It was never violent, so this is worse. And she basically said to her, if I ever hear you, or hear if I've been bullied again in that school, and you're her guidance teacher, I know exactly who I'm coming to chat the door.
Yeah.
Not with his door. And she was stunned, absolutely stunned, that a teacher would boast about egging on her class favourites to go and bully someone because they were in care. She literally told them, you know, that she didn't give a fuck because I was a Redhill bitch. And what she meant by that was 20, 30 years prior, apparently, Redhill had, because it was run by the Salvation Army, had been a refuge for prostitutes to put them back in society without being prostitutes type thing. This is 30 years before my time was up. I didn't have a clue about any of this. But apparently, that's why she didn't care if I was getting bullied or not, because I was a Redhill bitch.
Yeah.
Simply because of something that happened possibly to her. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a prostitute still her boyfriend 30 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, she's got some agenda there, isn't she?
But I was a Redhill bitch and deserved everything I got.
Yeah, that's, some agenda there, isn't there?
What the hell? You're acknowledging that you're egging on these students to continue and escalate the violence against me.
Yeah, I shouldn't know.
Because I'm in Redhill? What?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
There's a bit more. But there's lots more. And so if you're going to do it, and you need the report from the police, and you need the report from that psychiatrist.
Yeah. So in regards
to all of my blabber.
In regards to the application now, would I just be able to ask you a couple of questions just so I can just
I am not committing to anything right
no,
now.
No, you don't have to. So it's just your date of birth and address. That's all, just to pop it on the file.
This is blood money, and whoever this case goes to, I don't ever want them to forget that.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, they're taking money from someone who is a victim.
Yeah.
Of and it was horrific. And looking in, it's horrific to happen once to anyone, let alone a lifetime of it.
Is what I'll do is I'll finish your application up, and then I will speak to my colleague about it, and I'll see then if I can give you a call back if she can to discuss everything. So I just need your date of birth and address. Just basically, whenever we get in contact with you, we have to do data protection. So I just need those, just so we can.
I'll give you the postcode first, because that's easier to do it in mathematics. Yeah. Charlie Foxtrot 32.
Yeah.
Stephen Papa Uniform.
Yeah.
And number 32. I don't know if you're going to search it or type it.
Yeah.
Are you going to
type it, sorry.
Type it. Denim. So that's D for Delta, I for Indigo, N for November, A for Alpha, and M for Mike. Couldn't remember what it was, that. Street.
And what
and I will let you Google the actual town name or village name, because I still can't pronounce it. It's like, I think it's Nanty Moy. It's in Wales.
So.
And that's in Virgin.
I was born and raised in South Wales.
Oh, well, you would know. So Nanty-Moel.
Nanty Moyle.
There you go.
Yeah. I saw the CF and I was like,
I know we're all technically Celts, you know, Scots, Irish and Welsh, we're all Celtic.
Yeah, when you said the postcode then, I was like, oh.
I recognise that. I was
a CF.
CF, where were you?
Do you have Llantrisant?
Say that again, sorry.
Llantrisant or Pont y Prydd.
Oh, not Pondy. Yeah.
Yeah, not far.
If I said that, because I can do the hat in the first.
Yeah. I was typing it then, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I went up to Scotland a few weeks ago, as I said to Mum, foster Mum and Dad, great.
Yeah.
And also our girly to meet her boyfriend.
Yeah.
As in the dog. And it's with, obviously, being Scottish, I've actually, friends of mine that I've known for 10 plus years, they also have the same breed as I do, and we would like to make some babies with their gorgeous boy and our gorgeous girl. And as my girl is getting older now, so and we lost her, because they've known me through my previous girl, which is Willow, or Willow the Pillow. 72 kilo of just, do what you like. She's such a teddy bear, bless her. I don't know if you know what a Newfoundland is.
Yeah, I do.
Newfie. So her mum Willow, we lost her last year, and 10 days before we lost her, we lost her daughter.
Yeah.
So in the space of 10 days, we'd lost two. So the only daughter I have is Pippa, who is coming up 6. And Newfoundlands become veterans when they're 6.
Yeah.
So, went to see a boyfriend. It was with AI, because I'm a bit of a prude to go like any of that stuff. So it was all done very clinically. Most people were like, what? But it was done clinically. So hopefully, in a few weeks, there'll be a pitter patter of pollen. Wait, but they won't be, because they can't walk in public. Like,
so. Yeah,
and
no, my
blind
old dog Pepper.
Aww.
You said Pepper.
What kind of dog is that?
Cocker Spaniel.
Oh, that's it. That's it. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think my Willow the Pillow I think my daughter has her on Instagram. Is literally Willow the Pillow.
Oh, I love that.
Right, it's just nicknamed her. She was my Willow Bear. The other way you go, it's like, oh my God, are you walking bear? It's clearly a dog. Bears would have my arms and their mouth. And, well, Willow did that too. They're water rescue dogs in this island, so.
Yeah.
If you're saying you know the breed that you don't really, just search Moofy.
Mm.
And you'll see the little big teddy bears. They're 70, but one bag of sugar is a kilo, and they're about 70 kilo each, as in dogs.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of bags of sugar in one dog. But it helps, though, because they're great to cuddle if you're having a bad day.
They do help, don't they?
Yeah, because, you know, you can hug them and they literally will hug you back, quite literally, because their necks are so long and their heads tucked right in.
Yeah.
And you can proper hug them tight as well. You're not going to break anything.
No.
Because their bones are bigger than ours.
Crazy, isn't
Peter
it?
Pan, the Peter Pan dog.
Yes.
Not the St. Bernard.
The Peter Pan.
Because there's a Peter Pan with a St. Bernard in it, and that just disrespects the whole film. Because the whole thing about Nanny, or Nana, the dog, is that she was a nanny dog, and St. Bernards are not known as nanny dogs. Newfoundlands, however, are known as nanny dogs. Because they love kids. They are mildly, they're not mildly at all, but they are very protective of kids. And they'll just sit quite happily watching them play, but any stranger comes close, they make their presence known.
Yeah.
They don't attack, but they will.
Keep them safe.
They've got a very good growl on them that says, stay back. These are my babies. You know, and they're known for that. They're also known as service dogs. Because I've got it as an emotional support.
Yeah.
But I've got a few, because we have had a couple of litters in the past, where we've got three or four over 10 years that went to different families with autistic children, and they have been trained as service dogs or autistic service dogs for kids with autism.
That's fair,
isn't and
it?
Then Willow, the one that we lost last year, she was a pack dog as well, sex therapy. So she could go into nursing homes and hospitals and schools. And everybody could get, and she loved that because she just loves love. She's like, you want to give me a love? Okay, Mum, we're going this way. 74 kilos she was, and she's like, we're going this way. And I'm like, okay, hang on, I'm coming.
Oh, bless them. Oh, I love them, I do.
It's the only downside, it is a downside, I'm going to lie. The only downside is they hate the heat.
Yeah.
And they don't
we had to get a cool pad because he would just sit outside in the heat and just...
A cool pad? Oh, I wish it was that simple. And there's we have two ACs, mobile air conditioning units, because they cannot stand the heat. They can get heat stroke really quickly as well.
Yeah, whereas mine
so you probably hear it in the background, humming.
Yeah.
that's the mobile air conditioning unit. I'm sat here in a dressing gown, because my fleece is in the wash. Normally I'm in here with a fleece on, freezing, and the door goes, and somebody's looking at me at 32 degrees, and I'm like, hello? And they're like, are you okay? Are you poorly? No, I'm just cold. And they're looking at you like you've got two heads. You're cold?
It's
72 degrees. I'm like, not in this house, it's not. I've got Newfoundland and air conditioners at 10 degrees.
Oh,
yeah. I'm literally sitting here with blankets on and stuff. But it doesn't matter, though, as long as they're cool.
Yeah.
They're my babies. So.
Before I just forget, I'll just see. Can I grab your date of birth just before I forget?
19th of March, 76.
76. Perfect. Thank you very much.
And if you find the name of that psychologist woman.
Yeah.
Private practice halfway up Great Western Road, near Annie's Land.
What's it called?
Cannot remember. This is the thing. It's like a blank.
It's a private
practice. It's like a blank. It's a private practice. and she does like forensic.
And what was the street name or the name or anything? Did you
Great Western Road?
Great Western Road.
And it was
you mentioned something the beginning
West of the End.
You mentioned something before. It was something word beginning with P before private practice. Unless I misheard. Probably did.
No, I was just saying that she did, I think she was qualified to do like forensic reports.
Okay.
For court stuff. But technically, it was for court because she was sending this to the barrister.
Yeah.
And I got a copy, but after I ended up binning everything to do with it, I thought if I get it out of my mind, then maybe it will somehow erase it. It didn't.
Unfortunately, no.
But after the test cases, I thought, well, I've got no chance now because apparently it's unfair on the defendants.
Yeah, still crazy.
So I've just got to live with it.
Yeah. So what I'll do is I will write all this up now and I will get your file set up and then I will speak to my colleague about what we can do and I'll either get her to give you a call or I will call you myself. Is that all okay?
Yeah, the easiest is get a hold of that psychologist report.
Yeah.
And get a hold of because there is a case, even if it's a cold case. I remember the policewoman telling me this, and it is in Scotland. I remember her saying to me, "We're not closing the case. It's just we can't take it any further."
Yeah.
Right now.
So it's
a historical cold case.
Yeah. So in regards to us accessing that, so...
historical abuse.
Yeah.
Sorry, There's a unit in the police department that is for historical abuse.
Yeah.
And dedicated people.
Yeah. In regards to us getting that and stuff, so we will need you to sign the contracts just so that we can get all of that stuff. In the contracts, it will mention, obviously, the 14 days and everything like that. And any point, obviously, you can get back in contact if it's not something you'd like to continue with. But just for us to get those, we will need the signatures. And then following that, you can literally just email, call us or anything. If you want to withdraw or anything like that, you're able to. So would that be okay?
It's just a 20% thing. It's still in my head.
Yeah, so that's only if... So if obviously, I say if.
It's 20 grand.
When you get
it's a lot of money for you to not really need to do that.
Yeah, so obviously with that money, like with the fee and stuff, it's based on the time spent. So obviously in regards, if it doesn't take much time, obviously it can be lower. So with it will be maximum 20, but likely less.
It could be a lot less.
Yeah.
5 is about the maximum, I would say.
Yeah. So in regards to that,
20 grand is crazy.
Yeah, in regards to that, so if you're happy to sign the contracts for us to begin the work, and then if at any point you're like, oh, just give us a call or an email or anything like that, okay?
As long as you don't try and charge me money, if I change my mind, even after I get report, you can't charge me.
So it's a win, no fee.
You're only getting the copies of the report.
Yeah, it's a no win, no fee, so you don't need to stress about that. So obviously if we don't...
No, I meant if I decide... not to go with you and I have the report that I already have done, I shouldn't be getting charged for that.
No. So I'll confirm with my colleague to make sure, but I'm pretty sure that there wouldn't be any no. But I will double check. I'm about 99% certain that there'd be no charges, but I will confirm. And then it'll either be me or Leah that will give you a call probably next week. Is that okay?
Yeah, and how long doing it through you in comparison to the other option, not doing it myself, the other option, will it take? Because I've heard that some can take weeks rather than months.
Yeah, so the average, so it changes quite often. So let me just see what the most recent...
Because the things I've been seeing online are some are getting it in less than 6 weeks and some older ones are taking months. Which I don't get.
Yeah, so with the Yeah, so with the fixed payment or next of kin, it can take up to 8 months. This is from the Scottish Government website, and then with a normal panel, so the individually assessed ones, which is what I would obviously for you, it can take up to 9 months, and that's with anyone. And then with us, because we're private, so we tend to work quicker, because we have less client load than the government do. So we can get you through quicker, if that, does that make sense? I'm not sure if I worded
it
that
does.
Well.
It does. It means you get more time to, you get more resources.
No, so.
I mean, I might actually see you. Sorry.
Yeah, so with the time spent, so we have a log on our system that shows how much time we've spent on just your case. So it's not.
I hope it doesn't include this phone call.
No, so with the time spent, so it's not the time frame that is taken to get the
bits and bobs.
Yeah, it's not the whole time. It's just the time we've spent independently just on yours, and we have a breakdown of everything.
And it does not include this phone call, does it?
I think it does.
It does? Oh, crap, I'll be on your 40 grand. Well, the first phone call, which is you reaching out, it shouldn't cost me anything, because you're just trying to get my business right now.
Yeah, no, we'll try and work something
technically, it's a sales call.
Yeah, we'll work something out with that.
Because I'm not paying for the sales call. No thanks. You've been very nice.
I completely understand, that's okay. yeah, so
you just
obviously
have to get a talker.
So with the obviously getting your reports and through everything like that, obviously you've given us the names of where to go, who to go, the councils, everything like that. So obviously that shouldn't
I think I literally blanked it, if you know what I mean. I can't blank the nightmares and whatever, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've tried to erase some from my mind.
Yeah, you sometimes it's a subconscious thing as well. You try and just like black things out, and forget. Yeah,
I do know that the police is in Glasgow. The office that you need is in Glasgow. I even remember where did it used to be. I'm talking about the actual physical location, because it was in one location and it was literally the only dealt with historical abuse cases.
I should be able
and it
to
was
find
a dedicated
that out.
Unit.
Yeah, no,
a small unit.
File.
And there is obviously a police report number or whatever you call it. And
yeah, so we should be able to get all that for you. So would you be okay if I was to write all this up for you within the next couple of days? Send
as long
over the
as it doesn't cost me anything right now and I have no obligations, then that's fine.
No. You don't. So again,
no
like obligation. The 14-day thingy, obviously, so we can begin the work straight away while it still remains. I'll confirm everything with my supervisor and my colleague regarding any charges and cancellations and withdrawals, just so I can be 100% certain.
What I'm going to do then is I'm going to say provisional yes, but I want it to be put on pause until Monday. And then give me a ring back, because I want to try and see, just for my own sanity, whether I can actually remember the name of the barrister. That would be pretty helpful, I'm assuming. And the name of the psychiatristy person, and even the name of the police station.
So I can have a look into all that for you, and then I will try and get the contracts for it. So there's part 1 and 3, which would be so all of your details and then short statements. I'll send them
what I've
to you,
said is
so you can just have a look at them.
I'm not doing anything until Monday.
No, I won't ask you to sign them. I'll just send them over. So basically everything that we spoke about today, just written down on paper for you, so you can read it through in your own time, get a full understanding of what we do and everything like that. Obviously, you're not going to sign anything, obviously. And then on Monday, I'll give you a call back. If I've found any information out, obviously regarding that psychiatrist and things like that. And then I'll speak to my colleague, see what we can do from there. Is that okay?
And then obviously you'll speak to me about what I've managed to hopefully uncover as well. Because that would be helpful if you have that.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a limitation on how long police keep things or
they should, but some of them they come back, but we go
as it's historical abuse to begin with. I don't think there should be a statute on that, because
no,
it's already historical.
Yeah, exactly.
To get rid of it would make no sense.
unless I'm dead. But, yeah, you know what I mean? And no, even then
they shouldn't really. But yeah, so we'll have a look into it, and then I will give you a call Monday, or I'll send you an email, and then possibly give you a call on Tuesday, just to make sure that I have all the information.
Okay. I have one quick question as well, actually, about my brother, because we talked about my brother's thing earlier. Our birth mother, I'll say this because it's her. Put it this way, when she found out he died, when I eventually could actually tell her, she did, oh, my son, crap.
Yeah.
She hadn't bothered about 5 years. But she also did the big I am, you know, wish funeral. I want to bring friends, pardon. She wanted to bring along friends, like it was a bloody picnic to her son's funeral. To support her. And I'm like, hang on a minute, wait a minute. Whoa. Handsome. And I know what he wanted. It's even recorded. Because he had a dash cam when we sat in the car talking about his death. Because we knew it was going to happen. He was palliative care.
Yeah.
He didn't know when. And he said, I'm telling you now, she's not at my funeral.
Yeah.
And I don't want Peter, this is one of our half-brothers, I don't want Peter there either. That's his words. And he probably hates me because the things, he was a lot more cut and dried and can cut people like that. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I have more empathy, I suppose.
Yeah.
Whereas with Sean, you'd have to, because of the abuse actually he's had, you have to explain things differently to, had to explain things differently to Sean.
Yeah.
So that he would understand what you meant.
Yeah.
And how it would affect other people. And then he'd get it. But he was adamant that she not be there.
Yeah.
She has not, she barely knows him. She wouldn't, even though I came down to England, so my kids would have a gran.
Yeah.
So I remember growing up and seeing kids with Christmases and birthdays. I had none of that.
Yeah.
I was in there the whole time. Christmas, birthdays, I was one of the very few people that were always on their own.
Yeah.
And I remember how awful that was. And I wanted the kids to at least know they had a family. I spent most of my life trying to figure out who my family was, because until I was 15, I didn't know anything. And I was an adult, and I discovered I have a huge family in Ireland that I knew nothing about. But with Sean, as I say, he was very adamant that he is not to be at the funeral, and nor is Peter. I let them come to the funeral, and I'm sorry, Sean, I'm looking at his ashes right now. I'm sorry, but you know me, I can't do that, because that to me is cruel.
By the sounds of it, he would have understood that as well.
I just couldn't do it. I mean, I'm always a bitch when it comes to my birth mother anyway. I can't win them out of up. So, and Sean, we laughed about that at the time.
Yeah, no.
I said, if I don't invite them on the bitch, and if I invite them, and he even said it, she's going to make it about herself. And that is exactly what she did. The one thing that I knew his taste in music, he's a very similar taste in music and all that. He didn't want a busy funeral. He wanted a very small, funeral with family that actually, in his world, gave a shit about him, which is technically would have been me and the kids, my kids.
Yeah.
Some point in January. But I couldn't do that either to my other brothers, because I thought that was a step too far, maybe. I understand where he was coming from, and that where have they been? I've been down here with you since Sean Paul. My son's now 30. We moved down here to England when he was 4.
Yeah.
So they've had 26 years of trying to get to know him, and there's been very little movement in the relationship between them.
Yeah.
Because they never really bothered. He could have done more, I told him this too, but he never did. But anyway, so I allowed, that sounds so bad.
I know what you mean.
I couldn't not include her in the funeral.
Yeah.
I felt that was too cruel. So I without telling her his wishes like that. I still haven't. I wish I did now, because of the way she's been behaving. All she went on about was money.
Yeah.
And that made me really, really angry. I am now in debt of four and a half grand for the funeral costs.
Yeah. Funeral costs, honestly, one thing, but yeah.
And even though, you know, on Universal Credit and whatever, that I didn't even apply for this very small payment you can get because I literally had a breakdown.
Yeah.
So, again, I wouldn't have covered the funeral anyway, even though it was a very basic celebrant, crematorium. That was it. And that was like £4,600.
It's crazy, isn't it?
She hasn't offered a penny, but she was on about money.
Yeah.
And what she could claim, and could she get widowed, but she wondered if there was an allowance she'd get because she'd lost a child. And I'm like, you did not raise this child. This child was raised in care and I didn't say any of this, but she was an unfit mother. We were removed from her.
Yeah.
She's telling people that she gave us up. No, she did not. We were removed from her many times.
Yeah.
Because she was very young, yes. She was only 14 when she got pregnant with my sister. And she was 17 by the time she'd had me. So she had 3 kids in 3 years.
Yeah.
So I get it. She was very young. I to a point, understand that. She didn't have a clue what she was doing. She also had run away from home before all this, so she was on her own. So, I have a bit of empathy there. But when she started going on about money and what she could get and what she could do this with and she could do that with and have you applied for this and have you applied for that. And the other wish she had for his funeral was a country drive. He loved to drive. And he loved country drives, you know, through the trees and the hills and all that
yeah.
kind of stuff. So there was a little route that we used to take. We both went to Bingo now and again. He went a lot more than I did. But we got to Bingo, but we'd always go the back way because it was a really scenic little country drive route.
Yeah.
And that, he wanted that. So when, you know, the coroner had him for a while because he was 49. So when eventually I could get all that sorted, and get that planned. It was planned that we go on this, literally. We couldn't go the whole way because there's the hearse would not have been able. It's one of those kind of bridges where vans don't go that way because they're actually stuck. So and it's a one-way type thing. You have to give way to let other vehicles cross. And
yeah,
I thought,
my home is near Saundersfoot and it's all just lanes.
Yeah. Well, he's going to get stuck on that bridge, is what I was thinking, like a seesaw. He'd be the seesaw at the top in his hair. So I thought, well, can't go that way. So we can do half that journey, though, and just there's a big roundabout before that bit, so we'll just do the roundabout and come back. My mother, on the other hand, even though she knew what time the limousine was going to be at the destination to pick her up, everybody knew the times. She hadn't even left the house when everyone else was in the funeral limousine and Sean's hearse is sitting outside my door.
Yeah.
He's in that hearse. And she turned up 40 minutes late and bright orange.
Oh.
His favourite colour was purple, deep purple. So, and I got everyone, I didn't need to fuss about it. It was just, I just picked them up.
Yeah.
I got everyone deep purple flower. For the obviously to pin on, just as a thing for Sean.
Yeah.
And she turned up in bright, and I mean like luminous, bloody orange. Like she knew it was also being televised to a point because it was being sent to Australia, and to our sister who's in America.
Yeah.
So it was so that they could participate in the funeral, and she knew she was going to be on camera. Bright orange, seriously. To a funeral, you want to make any more about you?
Yeah.
You want me to open the coffin and pull Sean out? You want to sit in it? Is it to make it look cool? I was so angry. I didn't say a word, but I was so angry.
I can imagine.
But because he was late, he didn't get his drive. He didn't get that final country drive. It was 10 minutes there, 10 minutes back. Because she didn't turn up to when she did, the last little bit I could have done for him, I couldn't do. Because of her. So in the end up, he went from my house through the industrial estate, and I'm talking it's less than a mile from my house to the crematorium. And he literally, his final drive was right past the industrial estate where he used to work, to the roundabout by Sainsbury's to the crematorium. That was it. That was right there. Rather than up and around and then back.
Yeah.
A nice country drive, but she couldn't even give him that. And all she's done in the meantime is gone about money. And that's why I told you this bit, because I want to make sure that she doesn't try on his behalf, my ass, sorry, try and do this. Because she does not know what he went through.
No, so that wouldn't
And she
be...
was not party to his life until we were adults.
So just to double check the spelling of his first name and her name, just so I can...
It's Shane Michael. His actual birth name is Shane hyphen Michael.
That S-H-A-N-E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But his son name is Redwood. Yeah, he's McCafferty, but it goes to her age, because technically she was still under 16.
So Redwood.
So even though she lied to her birth father about her age, so he didn't know she was underage. So
she
changed her name. So it gets even more complicated. More complicated, because her technical name, her actual legal name, is O'Sullivan. But
Anne O'Sullivan.
So hang on, she's not even called Anne.
Oh.
Again, I had no idea who this woman was. On the birth certificate, it says Anne Redwood and Thomas McCafferty. On his birth certificate, it says Anne Redwood. Doesn't have his name. Because again, she was under 16. This is in Scotland, remember?
Yeah.
And obviously, our father was not around that day for the birth certificate to be done. I think she did it deliberately because she knew she was underage. Because she couldn't say that he could sign the birth certificate unless they were married.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was born, she was legal. She was 17. See, she was 17. Her birthday's in September. So she had turned 17 in the September. I was born in the March.
Yeah.
John was born in the previous March to my birthday. So he was born the year before. So she wasn't technically 16 until the September. So she wasn't legal. He wasn't legal to go on birth certificate because she would be charged with rape.
Yeah. Did you say so on your birth certificate? It says.
It says Anne Redwood.
Anne Redwood and Thomas McCafferty.
Yeah. And then. On my brother's, it's Shane Michael Redwood, and it's just her name, which was Anne Redwood.
Yeah.
And the same on my sister, who's Bernadette Elizabeth Redwood, even though it's McCafferty, we all have the same dad. But her family name, our family name, technically is O'Sullivan.
O'Sullivan.
Her mother, it gets more complicated, because her mother... Our grandmother married a man that later turned out to be already married, and his name was Halligan. So technically, she was born Sheila Marie Halligan. That's her birth name.
Your mum?
My mother, yes.
Sheila
Marie.
Birth mother, sorry, yeah.
Sheila Marie, so it's hyphenated again.
Sheila Marie Halligan.
Halligan. And she was born in 1956, I think. Well, she was 17 when she had me, and I'm now 50. So, come back, if that makes sense. And the O'Sullivan is again. Yeah.
So
the O'Sullivan is a family name.
1959. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I'm like,
she was Callaghan because
Callaghan.
That was her mother and father were married in Southern Ireland, but he was already married in Britain with another official family. So he was a bigamist. So technically, he's O'Sullivan.
Okay.
And Redwood, she changed her name to Redwood, Anne Redwood. I don't know where the hell that came from. Anne, Sheila Marie. But she changed her name to Anne with an E, Redwood, simply because she liked the name of the tree.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, okay, so you give us that name because you like the name of the tree.
Yeah.
But then Charlie Cox was our mother's next husband after our father.
You had that name for a while before you found out about the McCafferty, didn't
well,
you?
Well, our records, if they're ever found, are going to be under Cox, COX, until I was 15, and they might have changed it to McCafferty.
Did Anne or Sheila ever take the Cox surname?
Yeah, after they were married, but she was known as Anne Cox.
Anne Cox, okay. And quickly, just before, so I'll,
and she's
I'll
now
write all this up.
Went back. She's now
she's
Sheila Marie. Now she's Sheila Marie Wilson. She may have went back to Halligan because they got technically they separated. So.
Yeah. Right. So this is what I'll do. So I'll write.
My mother, birth mother, she says that she's a very very good Catholic, very very good Christian. Okay.
Yeah.
How many kids and how many abortions? I'm not going to get into that, but, you know, it's like, whoa. But monetary-wise, when it comes to my brother...
Yeah, no, I'll... I've written it on file, so I'll make
Oh, yeah, and then the other name is Murray. She married someone else called Murray.
Murray.
Who is Peter, my youngest half-brother. He's called Peter Murray.
Okay.
And she was Anne Murray. So
right, if anyone...
See what I mean?
Yeah, if anyone contacts us regarding this with any of those names.
Yeah, you've got more, just two more.
Nope.
You have John Robert Cox, which is my half-brother. He's the second youngest.
Yeah.
And then Charlie Cox, which is my oldest younger brother. Half-brother.
Oldest half-brother.
And then my sister... who is a full sister, is Bernadette, it was Wilson. She chose it after her foster parents' name. You can understand why we all these different names.
Yeah.
But she's now married in an American. I don't know her married surname.
That's okay. Right, so if anyone, any of those names, I will keep
an
eye out. Anyone
A wild outlier here is Wendy Elvins.
Wendy Elvins.
The ex-girlfriend of my middle half-brother, aka the second youngest, John. I think she's nothing to do with the family at all, but, you know, she thinks she's everything in the family.
Yeah,
anyway.
No. Yeah.
You
right,
had
okay.
a child with my half-brother, and she's got Abigail.
Okay, right, so all of that
Very
now
complicated.
Is added. Right, so I'll get these written up for you. Just one quick question. What GP are you registered with at the moment?
Technically, at the moment, it's Dr. Smith of Elgar House in Redditch. REDDITCH.
In Redditch?
Yeah, Worcestershire, yeah. Don't ask me the postcode. I know that it's on...
I just figured that out.
If you Google it, Elgar House.
Yeah, fine.
They might have a copy...
So regarding the GP, so we contact your current GP because they should have all of your previous medical records. So realistically, that should be on there. So is what I'll do now over so today and tomorrow, I'll get all this written up. I'll send out the contracts for you just so you can have a look. And then the only one we will need to get any records is the letter of authority. So I can send that one just to you separately in regards to getting your records through, and then that way then you haven't, do you know what I mean? And then
I will need a copy of that because
my solicitor
from before for something else tried to send through, but he sent it on a weird email thing and I never ever got it.
Yeah.
But apparently you have to be a member of that particular solicitor's panel. I'm not a solicitor, I don't have access to it. A portal. So it needs to be in paper form.
Yeah.
Or a USB that I can act,
Yeah, so we'll get all these records through, and I'll double check with my colleague now if there's anything that we need you to do regarding, obviously, with us sending them to you, it should be okay. But I'll double check, and then we'll give you a call on Monday or Tuesday. Is that okay? Monday,
no,
yeah.
Worries.
Is there a certain time to call you?
The afternoon would be better, because I fed the monkeys, because the reference is the girls, and that's my Newfoundland.
Perfect.
Which
well,
is
call Pippa you.
And her two daughters, and her auntie Nana.
Stunning.
Right, I have one that is actually like the Peter Pan dog. She's a very old lady. Auntie Nana Plant. She went
right,
to, she got special trust in 2017. I didn't run her because I can't do the running. But no. Auntie Nana, she's like, leave me alone, I'm sleeping.
Right, perfect. So I will give you a call. We call it
the graveyard of Noose at the moment, because it's like a graveyard in this house, because they just lie on the floor and sleep. They don't move.
No movement.
The nickname, the graveyard of Noose. Unless you mention a special word, and then they're like, what? And it doesn't involve outside. It involves stuff that's in a cupboard.
Right, perfect. So I will give you a call
Monday or Tuesday
in the afternoon.
Yeah.
If not me, it will be my colleague Leah. My pops on your phone.
Oh,
for communication. Yeah, perfect.
But again, I am not being charged for the initial phone call, because you rang me. And it was a service call.
Yeah.
It's not my fault I talked to you yourself.
Yeah, I will sort that out. See what I can do about remove. Obviously, yeah, I'll figure that out. But yeah, brilliant. All right, I will talk to you next week.
All right,
Camilla. And enjoy your weekend.
See you then. Okay, bye now.
Bye bye.